Welcome today to the Unashamed Podcast with Phil Robertson. Of course, we've got Al and Jace along for the ride as well. Today's episode is, you're going to like it. It's the Battle of the Beavers, which is an ongoing battle that's been going on for us for many years. Somehow that led us to the Ark back in Genesis 6 and talking about Noah and the flood. And baptism as well. So, man, we got a lot of topics today on the podcast. So, glad you tuned in. So, Dad, just so you know, according to what I'm looking at here, $70 billion of taxpayer money will be spent on public education. Yet a new report finds that just 2 in 5 American students are ready to attend college. Does that surprise you that $70 billion is being spent and yet not even half of students that are out there are not ready for college?
$70 billion, and you say, what kind of people are we looking at it? They were taught to rebel. They were taught that America is not exceptional at all. They were taught that America is not a great place. They were taught to replace America with anything. As long as God is left out, they were taught, they were trained to be socialists. You say, how would you look around and you got a 22-year-old and why is he all in with Karl Marx? You said someone taught him that. Well, now you've just unleashed a fact. All these billions of dollars are coming out of these bureaucrats, the Department of Education. That's who taught them that.
Right.
You're like, something is bad wrong with.
So you look at
who's teaching the children.
You look at public schools. Obviously, there's a major problem. There's a group called Freedom Project Academy. And I love their line here, Dad. It says the kind of education that we're looking at is to teach students how to think, not what to think. So this group is an accredited online school. It's built on Judeo-Christian values. Basically, it's an online group. They're saying, look, we got to figure out how the founders made us and start teaching people how to think.
You got to remember, they were never taught this crop that's running around, the millennials, they call them.
Right.
You say, were they ever taught anything about the founding fathers? They don't know who George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson,
right.
James Madison, they never heard of.
Except they were slave owners and terrible people.
Oh, yeah.
That we should tear all their statues down.
We keep teaching them this, saying, what in the world's happening to our country? Well, who's teaching you children? And what are they teaching them?
Exactly.
Well, I just gave you a little list. Look, here's how long this list is. I just jotted down a few notes. I didn't know you were going to be on this topic. I just had this for a little reserve here this morning. I'm fired up for whatever got here.
So freedomforschool.com, if you go there, freedomforschool.com, you can check out, get free information for the school. Their enrollment is going to end July 19th, so you don't want to wait around. You got to jump on this thing quickly.
Good for them.
They've also got a weekly podcast, The Dr. Duke Show. You can get it on iTunes. So July 19th, you got to get there before then. Take back control of your child's education. Freedomforschool.com. That's freedomforschool.com.
And see, so how are you going to get them out of the public school system? This group may help, because I just tell people, homeschool your children and go to Christian schools. What does this group, how are they
going
to
do? That's what they do. I mean, basically, they're doing what you're said, except now they're saying you can go online. They've got exams. They teach. They do all these different ways, but they're doing it. And
that's one way around the Department of Education. You got to remember, my major is education.
Right.
And I'm looking at it now, and I'm horrified by what I'm seeing. I'm saying, whatever happened to good teachers? Well, I, for one, got out of it. The pay was low. This government stuff started. I said, check into that.
So, you'd have never made it.
No.
Freedomforschool.com. Check it out.
I am unashamed. What about you?
All right. So, Dad, you just launch in.
Yeah, because I want to hear this, but I just thought.
Well, most people don't really think in terms when they speak of judgment. They'll say something like, they'll blame anything on Mother Nature instead of God. This is divine power over nature. At a touch, trees are fried. I mean, just like you sprayed them with Roundup, calming storms. Just think about if you had the ability to calm storms. In other words, he marks out the horizon on the face of the waters for a boundary between light and darkness. Who shut up the sea behind doors when it burst forth from the wombs? This is in the book of Job. When I said, this far you may come, speaking to the water, and no farther. Here's where your proud waves halt. So you start down through there and you look at all these things. Lightning and hail, snow and clouds, Psalms 148:8. Stormy winds that do his bidding. Proverbs 30, verse 4, who's gone up to heaven and come down? Who's gathered up the wind in the hollow of his hands? Who's wrapped the waters in his cloak? Who's established all the ends of the earth? What's his name? What's the name of his son? Mark 4:39, he got up, Jesus rebuked the wind and said to the waves, quiet, be still. The wind died, it was completely calm. Well, you look at that, fire, drought, floods, you say the bugs, pestilence, all kinds of turn loose, turn water into blood. I mean, you just start down the list of frogs. You're like, what in the world?
I feel like I walked in on the middle of a conversation.
Yeah. Me too.
The conversation is we pull up to our duck blind, one of about 60 duck blinds. I pull up there. The eunuch is with me, a millennial, a wayward, a straight millennial, gasping for air in a mighty throng of millennials that's forgotten where they
this
came
is the
from.
Guy that you hired. He worked for
me. I hired him. He works for me. So we pull up on this thing, huge duck blind, 25 foot long, 6 foot wide, roof and all. I go around on the back where you come in, Jace, on your end, where you hunted this year.
Yeah.
I crawled up in there, and I looked to my left.
Which is very courageous.
Yeah, I'm on my hands and knees.
There's floodwaters.
The floodwaters, so I'm watching for varmints of all kinds, cottonmouth. And I look down in there, wasp up on the roof, you know, I'm watching for them. And I'm looking, and I said, how in the world could a group of animals do what I'm looking at? Where I stand, Jace, down there, where I, on my end, where I usually stand, you got to remember the old floors have rotted out, and we just throwed some plywood on them enough to make the duck season last year. We have subsequently tore all that out, replaced all that with plywood, treated plywood. That's a 40-year-old duck blind. But the beavers had moved into that duck blind. I guess they swam up, come out of the water where our dog comes up on the boat, on the dog ramp.
Well, how deep is the water right there?
The water right now right there is about 13 feet deep and falling.
So the beavers have no place to stay.
They swam up in there, looked around, and said, you know what? We have a roof.
Yep.
The floor is pretty rough shape, but we can go through these holes in the floor, bringing these sticks and stuff in here. And why don't we just move in on this dude? It's his house. Let's build our house inside his house because he's done a pretty good job here. No rain on us.
And which blind is this?
That's the Little Cypress Lake where me and you.
The one you spend on your knees.
One in the back end down there.
That's the worst
the nurse practitioner, you and I, and he, we had some good shoots in there. Yeah. Even in the deep water.
Well, we need a higher roof.
Higher roof.
Well, yeah. So the floor is gone. It's all rotted out. But the beavers have built this thing. Where I stand, it was about chest high up to the shooting porch. It ran towards you halfway.
What, limbs? And
solid brush. The beavers had come in there one limb at a time and began to strategically place that. Way down in there, I said, because when I would pull up there to it, including that day, the neuter rats and the beavers would begin to head out from it. Well, I've got the 22, pop, 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 pop. I'm trying to get them. So Dan and I waded in on that. I said, we'll do what old Jace does. We'll use this beaver dam material and to brush the blind because we'll take it from the inside and throw it in every direction, and we'll have all this beaver dam on our duck blind. So I said, no use in throwing away good brush. So we used the beaver dam brush. But here's my point. You say, how in the world in the evolutionary chain of events – are you going to come out with one of these furry animals, a four-footed furry animal? I mean, he has teeth that cuts down trees.
Like a chainsaw.
Like a chainsaw. I mean, big trees. And then take them, cut them in two, drag them. They dragged thousands of pounds. That thing must have weighed thousands of pounds. They brought mud in and packed it in there, you know.
I mean, they're architects, some of the greatest architects in the world.
So when you look at, you know, what could God can do, how he works through nature and all that, well, I'm just looking at a bunch of beavers that have decided to build a gigantic house inside my duck blind without my permission, by the way.
Squatters.
That's why I'm in there, pop, pop, pop. I'm saying we got to take them out. Cause
not up in my house.
So I got it all out of there. We cleaned it all up. I put a new floor on it. And but it was about the whole time frame from the time we went in there and looked at it. The whole time frame was probably a week's bunch of work to get all the beaver stuff out, put our stuff in, and go from there.
But so I mean, please tell me you filmed this for In the Woods.
We filmed it, and the audience will be able to.
So you can see it on In the Woods if you want to see this whole thing play out.
My point is God works through, I've said this before, I think on the podcast, the largest animal-made structure on planet Earth. Planet Earth. It's a beaver dam in Canada that runs over a mile long, and you can see it from outer space. A huge thing out in the middle is like 10 or 12 feet high.
Where is it in Canada?
It's in Canada,
yeah.
In the middle of nowhere, but they've made a gigantic lake in front of it, of course, because they stopped up. But it's not like damming up like a river. They just dammed up kind of like an offshoot out there in a big marshy looking area. But the thing is over a mile long. Wow. If you took all of that debris and mud and logs and sticks out, it would be millions of tons that they've hauled of varmint just about that long, about that big around, web feet. He has web feet, teeth that cuts down trees, a flat tail that he can haul mud with and pack. I mean, you said, yeah, boy, the old evolutionist, he'll have a time researching that thing.
Well, yeah, how he got that. I mean, his DNA is to do that. And what's crazy to me is like when you got that place down there and you had to figure out how to control the water, because we want the water during duck season, then we want to pull the water off. Yep. You put your dump and your levee exactly where the beavers had already set up.
They
had it figured out.
We wanted to know the precise place to put our control system where we could hold the maximum amount of water. And I told my buddy, Mac Owens, one of the brothers, I said, probably the beavers, where they've got that dam, that's probably where we should put our flood control structure. I said, because they've already shot this thing. We've got a laser transit with us, a piece of equipment. I said, but the beavers probably have already shot it with eyeballed it. And I said, but I bet they're close. We shot that whole area with that laser transit. And Owen said, Robinson, where that beaver dam is precisely where this laser transit says you need to put your flood control structure. You hold the maximum amount of water right there where that beaver dam is. The beavers already knew it. Now, you just think of a furry, he's stinking. I mean, yeah. He knows this will hold the maximum amount of water. Not over there. We're going to put it right here. Well, you say, how did he get the ability to do that?
Well, if you only had some way of being able to build, instead of having this adversarial relationship that you have with beavers, if you could just somehow have a way to
work
with them. I mean, if they could ever come on board.
You are correct.
Forget about rednecks.
The war started when it all came down to who's going to run this.
That's right.
That's right.
Because I noticed when you put your dump where they already had a dam, the first thing they did was try to dig a hole in your dump so they could put their stuff in it. They didn't like what you did.
They didn't like what I did. They would not work with me. I declared war on them, and
This is a 25-year war, so this is going way back.
25 years ago, everybody got so fired up about it that Miss Kay put a couple of pictures up. One of them was a beaver. And the other one was me sitting there, and we were faced off on the wall down there. She put it on the wall where I built duck calls, and she wrote up above there, who will win? Well, fast forward, it's been 30-something, about 35 years later, I'm here to report to our audience that the Beavers won the contest.
Yeah. Where do they keep coming from?
They kept coming to the point to where now they're building houses inside my houses over there. I said, okay, all right. So this year, for the first time, they've been wanting to make that area a permanent pool, a lake.
Yep.
I've been cutting it out, their dams out with track hoes, and Red and I are down there with rakes.
When they do that, they kill the timber, which
they
is
kill the timber,
which right. they about.
But
have.
It's a natural thing. I mean, they were built to make lakes.
Well, they replaced the pin oak trees with cypress trees, but it just takes 50 years.
They got the ability somewhere. Someone says, well, that the evolutionists would say they just evolved and learned. But you'd still have to have the teeth to cut down the trees. And the tail.
And the flat tail.
And the flat tail and the webbed feet. I mean, you would have to have a varmint that could do that. And you say, well, yeah, but they had this abstract in their mind. One of these days, I'm a little bitty thing now, and my tail is round. And my teeth can't cut down trees. But I'm going to give myself a couple of million years. And one day in the future, I'll be able to put dams that are a mile long and 10 foot high.
And seen from outer space.
I'll be able to do that, and I'll just evolve and somehow or another pick that up. I'll be just an animal that makes lakes. I just think when you look at it logically, you say some
design.
Kind of mind designed that yeah. thing.
It makes me think of that verse, Hebrews 3:4. It says, every house is built by someone, but God is the builder of everything.
That's it.
Because the beaver actually
perfect
just,
verse.
He builds a house. Have you ever crawled up in one of their houses?
I have cut holes to where I could see up in there. The only reason I haven't crawled up in them, like the guy, the old mountain men movie,
Jeremiah Johnson.
One of them hid from the Indians by going up in that chute.
Yeah.
Up
yeah.
under it, you got a house made out of sticks, a big thing. There's a hollow place where all the beavers get up in there and sit around and eat willow limbs. Well, that old mountain man went through that little cut right there and got up in there. The Indians came up there and didn't know where he went. So they didn't find him because he hid up in there. The reason that was in the north, that was in the Rocky Mountains. Down in Louisiana, you crawl up in a beaver dam.
There's
cotton. All you have to do is pull up there and just hit it on top of it with a pole.
And everything's
cotton mouths are coming out in every direction. I mean, yeah. like I've seen as high as 10 or 12 cotton mouths come out of one beaver house. So you don't crawl up in there.
So
like,
the cotton mouth doesn't,
I did it. Yeah.
Do they bite the beavers? I mean, it seemed like they wouldn't live well together.
I would think they'd be bitten.
Yeah, maybe. But I don't see beavers floating around dead.
That's what I'm saying.
Unless there was a bullet
and they couldn't swallow one.
But I crawled up in one, that one up the creek that's about 30 feet. It was kind of a warmer day during the winter, and I only had to dip my head under for a second because I could see in there, and I had a light because I wanted to do it because I saw that Jeremiah Johnson
baby. Yep.
So when I popped up inside of it, I was surprised at how clean it was on the inside. You know, the outside looks
did they have chaotic. Was there furniture in there? Because
well, look, it was like little tunnels. It was like, here's the living room. So, look, I'm sitting here checking this thing out with a light, but then I sensed I was not alone. So when I turned around with the light, I'm telling you, it's a 40-pound beaver looking at me, and he went,
in beaver language,
exit.
In beaver language is like the guy when we all were duck hunting. We had all the doors locked. We're in a cheap motel. There's about three rooms, kind of like a little deal, whatever you call it. There was three rooms, one door, but three different rooms.
Oh, that was in Idaho.
Idaho. We're all asleep or Oregon or somewhere. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, I heard the door lock. I heard a little sound. So I thought, then I noticed someone is trying to jimmy the door, trying to get in the door. So I reached over and I had a Benelli shotgun at the time. I reached over and grabbed that. I was sitting in my underwear. I just leaned up on the edge of the bed, and I was shooting from the hip. I clicked it off safety, and I was just sitting there waiting on that door to open because I knew it wasn't any of us. So the door comes open this way, and this guy steps in, and he looks down there and sees me in my underwear with these whiskers and that Benelli pointed at his gut. And I didn't say anything. I was just sitting there. And he said, his hands came up like I told him, but I didn't say anything. He just went, he raised his hands. He said, wrong room. I said, I just nodded. You are correct. Yeah. He backs out. I go around on the door, get an angle on him to see if he had a weapon or something. And he's going across the parking lot. He looked back and saw me standing there with that gun. And he got his hands up higher. Like, so that was my introduction, or Oregon's introduction to the duck men.
That's called criminal.
But anyway,
in Beaver language, well, that scene was. Hey. Yeah.
That was the Beaver language saying wrong room. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm going to give it to the Beavers. They're going to dam it up. The oak timber will die. I've planted thousands of cypress out there way back, thinking one day we may just have to let the Beavers have it. Instead of cutting out all their dams, leave them and let them make a lake out of it like they want to.
So you've waved the white flag.
I give up. The Beavers won.
This is a big day.
This is a moment.
Big day.
Yeah. 25 years.
You're sharing a moment with us today.
And the great news is, once you allow them to have their lake like they wanted to, and I was getting in the way, I didn't want to kill the timber at the time.
But the trees
are talking 100 acres here that'll be a permanent pool.
Yep.
100 acres of oak timber. But I'd already spot cut it to get whatever timber was worth anything. I saw this coming way back. So the bottom line is I'm giving it to the Beavers. The water regime now will be up higher year-round, 100 acres of water permanent. It'll help us with the blue-winged teal for sure.
We're going to rip the blue-winged teal. Because the one year this happened where this water flooded for this amount of time, because we can't pull the water off now because the river stayed up so long, because then it has to dry out.
It's just a constant battle.
You got to till the ground to plant it. Well, that's never going to happen this year, so you leave it. That's why the Beavers were right all along, because they're like, you can't control the water here because you have years that the water just stays here.
Up to this year, we would drain it, and then I would pump it back up after I planted the mud flats. We opened up enough of it where we could have grass and all. Now it will change over to like duckweed, floating green duck seed.
But it'll mainly be a resting hole.
Resting hole. So coontail moss, aquatics.
And who says that rednecks can't live at one with nature? It just took a few years to figure that out.
I've decided to work with whatever's thrown at me, which in this case is beef. I'm gonna work with them. I'm gonna give it to them. They'll love it. And the great news is they will maintain it.
Yeah.
If we had a leak or something, they'll come in there and fix it, because you can go cut a hole in one of them dams. Come back the next morning, it's like you were never there. It's all back in there. Just like they just come in at night, patch it back up.
They hear that water running. That's why Si had the idea, about playing the tape with the water running.
Up on the show, yeah.
It's actually not a bad idea.
Sometimes he comes up with some stuff. So in our Bible study, I guess this is a perfect lead, because we left off in right around Genesis 6. The world's in bad shape, sin, violence, every thought. And so we kind of introduced Noah last time, which brings an interesting thought when you think about beavers and all the other animals, that the ark, so God speaks directly to Noah, who is the only righteous man out of all of mankind, however many were there, and I don't know how many, had been there from Genesis 1 to, or Genesis 2 till you get to Genesis 6, but everybody else is bad. It's all bad all the time.
We're down to 8.
We're down to 8, because you had Noah and his wife. He had 3 sons, and they were married. So you got, basically 8 people that still believe in the original connection to God. Everybody else out. I mean, just, that's what the Bible tells us.
It's really not that hard to believe. If you fast forward about, by our count, roughly 7,000 years, and you look at the human race, I can see how everyone could go bad.
Oh, absolutely. And you see it, because it encroaches. It starts on a culture. Look at our culture in 300 years, or I guess probably 400 once you go back to the original people. So you look at the situation. So Noah gets the word from the Almighty that there's going to be a judgment that's going to come. It's going to come in the form of water. And so it's going to be a just great flood. And up until this point, you look back in the garden, there were these mists and all this, but I don't know that it seems to give you the impression in Genesis that there had not been a major rainfall, like whatever.
Yeah, if ever. I've heard that before. I think they get
no
that
rain.
From
missed.
Hebrews 11, you know, the faith chapter when it goes through all the people of faith in the Old Testament.
Right.
In verse 7, it says, by faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen.
Including rain.
That's right. I think the idea that it hadn't rained. It was the water was coming from the springs or the
and
mist.
The mist that was there. You see that in the garden.
Very lush.
Right.
But it says, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By his faith he condemned the world, and he became heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. So that's interesting.
So it's somewhere, and it took him somewhere between 75 and 100 years, depending on, you know, there's a lot of, you know, scholarship about how long it took. It was at least 75 years to build this boat. Now, by the way, I just was in Lexington, Kentucky, speaking this last week. So some group of apologists, Christian apologists, have built an ark from the specifications of the Bible that's the exact duplicate of what the Bible laid out for Noah to build. I went and saw the thing.
I bet that was quite the boat.
Just that first view of it, when you look and you see the whole thing, you just can't believe it.
Is it like inside a building?
No. Or? It's like what they did was, like, one side of it is just the boat. And then the other side of it, they've built on some things to it. So when you're walking through it, they've got all these, you know, videos playing and talking not just about Noah and the ark, but about creation, you know, all these different things. So it was really just I think they built it as an evangelistic tool to be able to show people, look, here's how it could have happened.
It's plausible.
It's plausible. That's the whole point.
But the biggest argument I've always heard about that from people, non-believers, is they say, well, the ark couldn't have been big enough to hold all the animals. Did they address that?
They did. And I hadn't thought about it before. They did address it. And so they got all the cages where you have all the animals. And of course, they had, you know, they had little dinosaurs and everything else in there, which was kind of an old earth, young earth argument. But the way they addressed it was, they said God would have sent juvenile animals. It wouldn't have been full size. We think, you know, you think all the pictures you see of these full size, but right. if it was too little small of whatever it is,
valid, you know, point,
which is a pretty good point. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? If they were all juveniles, you know, so
if you had little beavers. If you had big beavers, by the time the flood was over, they would have had a hole in the boat. The boat sinks, and then I'll blame it on the beaver.
That's right. So they had all these juvenile animals, but it was really incredible because, I mean, it's like looking at a cruise ship, but the way this thing was built. Of course, now they didn't have, you know, there was a lot of talk about what gopher wood, you know, was it cypress? The guess was it was cypress, which would make sense, you know, because nobody can find out what a gopher wood. That's an ancient term. There's no such thing now as a gopher tree or whatever that was.
Well, maybe that was lost in translation.
Exactly. Maybe. So they figured cypress, some cedar they talked about just because of the region.
Plus it had like layers, didn't it? Two or three layers.
Oh my goodness. It had decks. And then of course up in the top of it, you had the, like a skylight type thing. So it brought down light, and the way they built this thing, the light shined down into the ship. It just kind of reflects and refracted off all the way to the bottom. So you could actually see in there, and all it had was some holes in the top of it.
How long was this thing roughly?
I think 500 feet.
Bible says it gives the dimension.
Right. I think it was 500 yards. I don't know. I can't remember. It was longer than a football field, and half as
500 yards would be five football fields.
Well, okay. So it was. Yeah. What's a football field?
100 yards.
Which is what, 330 feet?
300 feet.
300 feet.
300 feet.
So 500 feet. It was a football field plus some.
I got you.
That's how long it was.
I would have thought it would have been bigger.
Well, I'm telling you, it's hard to imagine it. I'm so glad they built
big.
It. That's big.
When you go to a football stadium, you think, if this was a ship.
So they show in there.
Basically, and the animals were given after their kinds. So he didn't have all the animals that eventually came out of all
and
that.
Things, right. That's why I said things, you know, evolve in a sense. You know, I mean, that the way God set it all up.
And that's the way they had the animals pictured inside. Here was this kind.
Yep.
Here was this kind. So it wasn't every particular one in that.
What's crazy to me is they used the argument that Cy used when, you know, because he thinks there are black panthers in the woods now. You know, he's seen them, jaguars running around, because everybody around in Louisiana has this. But what's funny is he used the same argument when we put a black tomcat in front of his deer cam, because we were going to, he was going to say he had visual evidence now of seeing a black panther in the woods.
It was a setup.
We were going to say, Si, we put a black tomcat. But that was his argument. When he saw the picture, he's like, well, I got evidence now. Here it is. I said, Si, we put the tomcat in front of your camera. He's like, hadn't you ever heard of a baby panther?
Which is, so, leave it to Si to find.
The same type of
argument. Would be the argument of why the animals.
I think that here's my take on the whole deal. Here's God, creator of Adam's molecules. He makes a man from dust. He arrives on earth from a virgin, which is impossible, you know, for man. So I think when people try to go in and find discrepancies in the Bible, and like try to put God in the box, you can't put him in a box. He controls atoms and molecules. He can heal you, you know, in a second. He can calm the storm, like, you know, where Phil started. So to try to trap, like, the ark wasn't big enough to hold all the animals. Look, he can do what he wants when it comes to atoms and molecules, and he's making planets and galaxies, and you can't think in your human mind and put him in that type of
box. He could have filled in all the blanks.
Oh, he did fill in all the blanks.
Just make them. Yeah.
That's right.
But I just think the human mind can't conceive that. That's why he became a human. That's why he became Jesus. It always comes back to that, something we can relate to. But I'm always just perplexed at why people try to find some little deficiency in their mind in the Bible. Like, oh, well, this doesn't fit. Well, you know, you're just not going to make God fit in your mind. That's why you spend your life.
Well, that's an interesting point, because now there were all these people there walking through this recreation of the ark, and most of them were people of faith. You could tell, you know, just from listening to the conversation. So we walked, and so was I. Obviously, I walked through in a wonderment, you know, of like, wow, look what God did here. I mean, like, I never doubted for a second that this wasn't, you know, and it could have been, you know, they took some artistic license. But I'm saying, I looked at it, it brought more reality to what I believe.
Yeah.
And so that's the difference in how you look at it. Somebody else may come in there. I'm sure there were some skeptics or
non-believers. Oh, yeah, they're coming in there saying, not big enough.
And then they're looking at everything and thinking, well, that wouldn't work. And
if you think about it, it's Genesis 6, for crying out loud, not too far from back to creation.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at it logically, you say, how in the world, if someone came along 7,000 years later and built a replica of this thing, it would be beyond human logic or reasoning to even have the concept of a boat this size.
That's right.
Back then.
Built by
and
ancients.
It's going to take you 100 years to build it.
Well, especially if it had never rained. And you're
telling
everybody.
I'm saying, you read the story and you say, how in the world could this kind of story, and the story of a great flood is within all culture, the Chinese culture. Oh, yeah. They all alluded to this big water,
That's right. That's right.
Throughout history. What's interesting, I talked to some of these creationist guys who are scientists, but they are creation scientists.
Right.
And one of them told me, he said, that's what convinced me to put my faith in Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
He said, when I studied with a secular group, he said, I was an atheist, and he said, my cup of tea, my expertise was going to be study the flood to show that it's a myth, a fairy tale, and all that. Shut it down. So they had a narrative. It's all a hoax. This biblical story of this great boat couldn't have happened, and the flood that came with it couldn't have happened. No way. He said, the further I went in my studies, I noticed, he said, I would get pushback every time I would say, like, guys, I'm telling you, I'm up in these mountains, I'm seeing these fossilized sea creatures in all the mountain ranges on planet Earth, shells and snails, and they're in the, embedded in these rocks on top of these places where there has, as far as we can tell, there was no water to get this stuff. He said, the more I studied it, the more I had my doubts that there wasn't a flood.
Right.
He said, well, the day came when I finally got the axe. They cut me off because I was researching it, saying, guys, the more I look at this, I'm saying it's a possibility there was a big water.
Yeah.
They're like, what in the world are you talking? We didn't put you down there. So it went against the narrative.
Right.
Well, he ends up ostracized, and he ended up with the creation scientists and saying, based on our study, it could have happened.
So the people that built this recreation, the doors on the thing, are, I don't know how big they are, massive. And so I took a picture of them. And
with no power tools.
That's right. And so here's what's interesting. So they do a thing about doorway to salvation. And so what these guys did is these massive doors, and people are taking pictures in front of it. But they had a light shining from somewhere, and it put a shadow of a cross on these two massive doors. Because then they went into the whole deal about the doorway to salvation, which everybody, you know, think about it, everybody, all the animals and Noah and his family that went in through those doors were shut, and that was it. Nobody else got in, which was this idea of judgment. But then they kind of made the leap forward about Jesus saying, talking about himself being a doorway, a door
plus,
to salvation.
Plus Noah, out of all the people on earth, there was one man that Jace quoted a while ago, one man who believed in the water.
Right.
Well, if you believe in the water, that's his faith that saved him. Because when God said, build a boat, because I'm going to flood the earth with water. Do you believe this? Well, Noah was like, okay. So he begins to, on a 100-year carpenter job, to build a boat because his faith, he said, I believe there's a water coming, and I'm telling everybody. He warned everybody that came up there.
Right.
They thought he was an idiot.
Yep.
No one believed in the water but Noah, and Peter alludes to that, and he
the 1 Peter 3, I was thinking that. Let me just read that. Yeah, I think it's an interesting
take. Yeah.
I mean, the way, here we are, 1 Peter, how long after the ark was this written? I mean,
it would have been 3,500 years.
4,000, at least
400 years later, you know, Peter writes that for Christ died for sins once for all, because it always goes back to like what I said, which is why they came up with the cross, which is, I'm guarantee, is where they got this idea. Us relating to God's going to come back to Jesus. And then it says he was put to death in the body, but made alive in the spirit, through whom also he went and preached to the spirits in prison who disobeyed long ago in the days of Noah, when God waited patiently in the days of Noah while the ark was being built. I'm not really sure what that means about Jesus going back and all that, but then all of a sudden he brings up Noah and the ark, and it says in it, the ark, only a few people, 8 in all, were saved through water. Which I guess the idea of the water pushed the ark up above. Yeah, above the, I mean, you needed that boat. And then it says we're saved through water. And this water symbolizes baptism that now saves you also. It's not the removal of dirt from the body, you know, like taking a bath, like you're washing the spiritual off. But it's the pledge of a good conscience toward God. It saves you by the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who has gone into heaven, is at God's right hand with angels, authorities, and powers in submission to him. I mean, I think this is one of the most, for a lot of people, one of the most confusing passages, because you have this analogy between Noah and the ark and then baptism. So one thing I know that stands out here, the actual baptism that we participate is involved in water, because a lot of people say, well, you're not baptized in water, but the symbol was water.
Yeah.
Most people say baptism is the symbol, But he's saying water symbolizes baptism.
That is correct.
And it's not that the water is saving you. He goes on to say that.
That's right.
Jesus Christ is what saves you.
Right.
That's obvious.
Yep.
So I think I think it really makes you grasp the power, number one, of Jesus, which is, number one, his death, burial, and resurrection. But then there's a way to symbolize that Noah faith, despite everybody saying, what are you doing?
Right.
Are you crazy?
No. The entire world was saying no.
Yeah.
And he was saying yes, and he was right.
Yeah. And I think also it's you. It's not you performing some work yourself. This
right.
was God's plan.
That's right.
That's why when people come to me and sometimes they say, well, you're saved through grace. I'm like, yes, Ephesians 2, it's clear. Grace, God's grace on a cross is what saves you. But he also chose a way for you to trust and surrender to him, which I think when you take baptism for what it is, you're actually not doing anything but surrendering.
That's right.
You know, it's a humbling thing to allow someone to dunk you in the water. And you realize that it's not really about the water. It's about that conscience of, yeah, right. I'm going to give my life to Jesus because
right.
that's what
Which
saves
you can
me.
See why it parallels so
He's
well with
He's basically zeroing in on when. The who is Jesus. The how is through your faith, like
right.
Noah. And you're told Jesus is the one who said, I have all the authority in heaven and on earth. Therefore, go make disciples, and you baptize them. Well, there's the water. Well, you got orders from headquarters. So to us, in a lot of ways, the ark.
Yeah.
Jesus is our ark.
That's right.
We believe. You said, do what? He said, go make disciples and baptize them. We got all these baptism verses.
Well, without the ark, without the plan, you drown.
The only way you're going to escape this thing, the water, if you believe it's coming. Do you believe it's coming? Everybody said, no. I mean, it hadn't rained yet, and they see this guy built on a boat out on dry ground, and they said, what are you doing? He said, there's a big water coming. And they said, here? There's going to be water here? And they said, Noah said, oh, yeah, it's coming. No one believed it but Noah. Well, the good news is because of his faith in what God said, I'm going to flood the earth with H2O. The springs, the rain, the oceans are springs from, I'm going to flood the whole thing. You believe it, Noah? He said, I believe there's a coming water. And so what now? He said, you're going to need a boat. Start building it.
That's right.
And that's how he was saved. And look, by his faith, he condemned the world. Look, the water, their unbelief in it, killed them.
That's right.
It's just like us. We hear, what do you want me to do? He said, repent and be baptized, all of you, in the name of Jesus. Well, some guy told me one time, he said, you think that all these baptism verses are alluding to water, unless you're born again of water and the Spirit. John the Baptist has taken him into the Jordan River, a
right.
stream of H2O. Well, I went through all these texts. He was saying spiritual water. That's just an analogy. It's really not, he's not talking about water. Well, when I got to this verse, 1 Peter, I said, what kind of water drowned everyone but Noah and his family? What kind of water was that? Was that spiritual water or was that rainwater, H2O? He said, that was H2O. I said, we finally identified water. So I read him this text and he looked at the ground and he said, he was a preacher. He said, I've never seen that before until right now. And I said, why don't you just do it? Go to the water.
Mm-hmm.
Let someone baptize you. Go baptize them. Just like Jesus said.
Right.
You got all these texts. They have to mean something. Jesus himself said, where did water baptism come from? Where did John's baptism come from? He asked a group that wouldn't let John baptize him.
Mm-hmm.
They were just standing there saying, nah, we don't fool with that. We're under the law of Moses here. We don't have to do this, you know, by faith, and that you're going to be to save the world. This is pre-death, burial, and resurrection.
Right.
He said, where'd it come from? Well, it's the question of the ages.
That's right.
Well, they said, if we say men, no, they said,
where's
if we.
Where's that at? Where's that verse at?
It's about like Mark 11. When he asked them, where did water baptism come from? Because they had asked him, how do you have the authority? Who gave you the authority to perform these miracles? And they wouldn't believe that he had just fried a fig tree. Looked like he sprayed it with Roundup. They said, who gave you this authority? He said, let me ask you something. John's baptism. And Luke 7 says, they rejected God's purpose for themselves, for they had not been baptized by John. So here's a group saying, we don't need this baptism thing being pushed down in the water. We ain't buying it. So by what authority are you doing these things, they ask. This is Mark 11, about verse 28. I will ask you one question. Answer me, and then I'll tell you about that. And I will tell you by what authority I'm doing these things if you'll tell me answer one question. John's baptism, was it from heaven or from men? Well, that's the text of the ages. Tell me. They discussed it among themselves and said, if we say from heaven, if water baptism came from heaven, he's going to ask Jesus, then why didn't you believe him? How come you didn't let him baptize you? If it's from heaven, they said, well, we can't say that because he's got us. If we say from men dreamed up water baptism. That's like right now in modern day planet Earth. We're in America. Someone says, do y'all baptize people? You say, we baptize people. Jesus said, baptize them. We never heard of baptism till Jesus showed up. When he showed up, we noticed the guy paving the way for him started baptizing people. Well, a lot of them rejected it and said no. To those people, Jesus said, well, where did it come from heaven or men? They said, we can't say heaven because he's going to say, why didn't you let him baptize you? So if we say from men, they feared the people, for everyone held that John was a prophet. So if we say baptism came from men, water baptism, then all the guys that John's been baptizing, they're going to say, are y'all crazy? The man's from God. He's telling you what to do. Put your faith in what Jesus is going to do. Repent. It was a baptism of repentance. Repent, repent. But they wouldn't do it. So they answered Jesus after they talked it over. We don't know. We don't know where water baptism came from. Have no idea. Now what do you say? He said,
should tell you something.
You know what he said? Neither will I tell you by what authority I'm doing these things. If you can't believe that I perform a miracle and I burn a fry a fig tree, and if you say, whoever did that, we need to listen to him. We need to follow him.
Which is the point. To me, when people argue about baptism, because I think it came from some hypothetical situation. All this argument came from a hypothetical situation, in my opinion. People say, well, what happens if somebody
doesn't get baptized, but they had faith,
why are we trying to build some kind of philosophy and
God
teaching?
Makes that call?
Well, right. Yeah, off of some hypothetical. It's like us humans are down here, you know, setting aside the awesome greatness of God's plan, and you know, for some hypothetical situation that we want to make sense of. And my point is, when people understand Jesus, they run to the water.
They do.
You can reenact Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection in water. Oh, they're running. You couldn't keep them out of there.
It's a beautiful thing.
And so I always say, people don't understand baptism, in my opinion. They don't understand Jesus. You say, well, what do? You don't give them a bunch of baptism verses, because Jesus is what saves. Right. Jesus is what motivates. Jesus is the reason. So they see that, just like the analogy that Peter used in 1 Peter 3. He was going back to Noah and the ark, and then he showed how this pledge saves you by the resurrection of Jesus Christ. The water symbolizes baptism back in his day. Well, if I read that, I'm running. I'm running to some water.
Me too.
By the way, this was one illustration that Peter used in 1 Peter 3. Paul used another one in 1 Corinthians 10, where he talked about the cloud being over the Israelites as the Red Sea is on both sides. And he used baptism in that picture because they were under the water when they were coming out of there. The Hebrew writer talked about the cleansing water going into the temple. So you see all the New Testament writers look back and said, look, these are all symbols. God's known he was going to make this part of it the whole time. The Israelites didn't know because they weren't baptized. But like you said, John comes along and Jesus comes, and it's like, now there's a chance. This is what the covenant, this is what Judaism, this is what the Old Testament, it was always about this.
I think baptism is camouflage too, and victory. You think if you're in a war, the last thing you would think to win the war would be to surrender. You, that when somebody waves a white flag, you're like, well, he lost. But when you think about what Jesus did, he basically waved the white flag on the cross.
That's right.
And what? That was his way to victory over the evil one and triumph over sin by actually doing the opposite of what you think, which is surrendering.
That's right.
Was, which, in contrast, gave us the victory. Yep. I think baptism is the same thing. So when people use that argument about, what are you saying? That's some kind of work that you physically do. I think it's the same camouflage as the cross of Jesus. You're obtaining victory through actually no legal action of yourselves. You're giving it all completely up.
Right.
Because you're coming in contact with the ultimate victory, which is the blood of Jesus and that resurrection.
Yeah, that's perfect.
I think one of the greatest examples I see in the Old Testament, and it wasn't even about baptism, Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram, 2 Kings 5. Here's a great metaphor. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier. Old Naaman had one problem, but he had leprosy. Now, bands from Aram had gone out and had taken a young girl captive from Israel. She served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, if only my master would see the prophet who's in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy. Old Naaman needs to go to that prophet over there, and he'll cure him. Well, Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. By all means, go, the king of Aram replied. I'll send a letter to the king of Israel. So Naaman left, taking with him some gold, silver. With this letter, I'm sending my servant Naaman to you so that you may cure him of his leprosy. Take care of this thing for me. Well, as soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he's trying to pick a quarrel with me? When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message. Why have you torn your robes? Have the man, Naaman, come to me, and he'll know that there's a prophet in Israel. So Naaman went with his horses and chariots, and he stopped at the door of Elisha's house. The girl, the slave girl, had said, look, you need to get in cuts with this Elisha. He'll take care of it, and he'll cure you of his leprosy. The king of Israel said, what in the world? He sent him a letter. He said, I can't do this. Well, here comes Naaman with his little troop. He pulls out in front of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to him. Elisha's in the house. He said, who's out there? He said, well, some guy got leprosy, and he's come to you to cure him. What do you want to do? Elisha said, go out there and tell him to go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you'll be cleansed. Tell him to go down to Jordan, dip 7 times. I didn't say 1 time. I didn't say 3 times.
You're adding I that said, part, right?
I'm just saying.
He's paraphrasing.
He should have said, well, you know, one would have done it. Okay. But he said, no, tell him to dip 7. And I mean 7. Well, Naaman went away angry. He said, I went to this prophet who's supposed to be this big healer, and he sends word to me through a little old servant. Said, hey, he said, go down on the river, dip yourself 7 times. You'll be good in the Jordan now, in the Jordan River. Dip 7 times, you're good to go. Naaman, he's angry. He's the one with the leprosy. His hides are rotting off of him. I thought that he, Elisha, would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord.
He
and
wanted wave, a big show.
Wave his hand big over show. The spot and cure me. He said, I thought, you know, this is going to be a big deal here.
That's right.
Go to the Jordan River and watch. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than any of the waters of Israel? What's just me crossing 2 rivers to get over there to another? What's the diff?
He was making about the water.
A river's a river. Yeah, there's water. So what? Couldn't I be washed in them and be cleansed? So he turned and went away in a rage. He's eaten up with leprosy, And the man of God said, go down on the Jordan River, dip 7 times, you'll be all right. He said, go down to the Jordan River. What? Naaman's servants came to him, and they said, listen, my father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he tells you, wash and be cleansed? He's made this thing easy for you. Mm-hmm. We know which river to go to. We know how many times you need to get dipped in the thing. Dip yourself 7 times. Why don't we just do it? Well, so he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan. He finally said, all right, that's what he said. I'll do it.
White flag. Yeah.
He dipped 7 times as the man of God had told him. And his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. Here's the point. It wasn't the water.
That's right.
But he had to go to the right river, and it was H2O flowing down it. You say, but that's not what cleansed the leprosy. God cleansed him.
That's right.
That's what baptism is like.
As ridiculous as it was.
As ridiculous as it was.
No, in the heart. Everybody thought that was ridiculous.
Right.
It's not baptismal regeneration. There's power in H2O. It's an act of faith. You say, what God said.
It's bigger than baptism. Our whole life seems ridiculous to the world. Every time you think, you know, people are like, this is so silly that you're following Jesus and believing all this hocus pocus.
And somehow you're going to die to sin and be buried
that the servant mindset, serve other people, they had no problem believing.
Yeah.
He just said it. Go do it. The prideful guy who had the wealth and the power and the he was the one that was like, who are you? His whole response was just what you're describing. The idea is submit. You said it, which is the perfect segue to end our podcast.
Every time I see a big rain or a rainbow, I think, oh, yeah, I'm on the winning team.
It's real simple. Noah, there's a big water coming. Do you believe I'm telling you the truth? There's a big water coming. You're going to need a boat. Do you believe this? Noah said, big water coming. What I need to do? Build a boat. He said, okay. His faith in the coming water saved him because he's the only one, he and his family, that had a boat.
So we started the podcast with Phil raising the white flag to the Beavers. You win after 40 years. We end the podcast by saying we raise the white flag and surrender to Christ.
That's right.
That's what saves us. Perfect way to end our podcast today. Next time we'll talk about sort of what happens after that, because obviously everybody dies except for 8 people, so we kind of got to reboot the whole system.
And we take them to the water, Al, just like Naaman went to the water.
All the time.
And next week we get the birthplace of hunting.
That's exactly
Genesis
right.
Genesis 9.
You do not want to miss it. It's going to be really good. So we'll see you next time on Unashamed Podcast. Be sure and tell your friends about it. iTunes, YouTube, Blaze TV, you can find it in all these different places. And I know I'm getting a lot of feedback from folks. A good friend of mine, Sexton from West Virginia, sent me this hat. So that's for you. And I'm getting a lot of great comments for everybody about the podcast. So thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And tell other people about it.
My final line to Neil Cavuto when we were talking about these matters, about all the words that ended in ism, I told him, I said, Neil, I believe in 2 words that have ISM behind them, baptism and capitalism. I said, those 2 I embrace. God gave us 1 and our government gave us the other one. I said, I believe in both of them.
There you go. Perfect. Perfect.
All the rest of them, no, sir.
Perfect philosophy.